It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Good morning, guys. Interesting, because Preet Bharara started the weekend by claiming he was fired by President Trump and his administration, when in fact the White House says, hold on a second, there were more than 40 U.S. attorneys all around the country who were asked to resign, just as we see at the beginning of any new administration, Democrat or Republican. It was only when Bharara refused to resign that essentially he was fired, pushed out, however you want to classify it. Despite those facts, he is now out tweeting, as you say, suggesting that he was investigating Donald Trump's business empire and or activity at Trump Tower without presenting, of course, any evidence. And despite those facts about how all of this played out, it is not stopping liberal hero Elizabeth Warren from going through with a tweet storm, basically rushing to the U.S. attorney's defense, saying, among other things, you can't fire the rule of law at real Donald Trump. You can't shut down ongoing investigations by career prosecutors. Warren went on, GOP and Dems respect Preet Bharara as a fearless prosecutor who stands up to both parties and Wall Street. And I guess that's why Trump fired him. She finished it by saying, newsflash, at real Donald Trump, the Senate confirms U.S. attorneys and you're not replacing real prosecutors with cronies without a massive fight. Well, Judge Jeanine Pirro says this is all much ado about nothing.
This is a non-story. It is not unusual for any new administration to seek the dismissal of political appointees, especially when a new party comes in. But why go quietly and with dignity when you can create chaos?
All right, so there you go. There's Judge Jeanine putting the cherry on the story. This is Sandy Rios in the morning. Happy Monday to each and every one of you. Well, since we last talked, that's kind of one of the big stories that the media's, you know, having a frenzy over. But of course, as Judge Jeanine and actually Ed did explain too, there's nothing to see here. We know that Bill Clinton they all do this. They want their own people in. The Justice Department wants their own U.S. attorneys in the various districts of the United States to carry out the president's will and to have his priorities. Like, for instance, you know, one of the things that I was involved in when I was president of CWA was trying to get Attorney General to prosecute obscenity. There had been no obscenity prosecutions under Bill Clinton. In fact, pornography and all of this kind of stuff has just absolutely gone through the roof, and there was no pushback. So we lobbied for that, and that's the kind of thing that the U.S. attorneys would do. So they look at their roster of cases and all the things they might attack. If you have a president who cares very much about that, like Ronald Reagan had a commission on pornography, then you'd have your U.S. attorneys go about the business of carrying that out in their own districts. So that's kind of the way it works. But obviously, Preet Bharara, who was appointed by Barack Obama in 2009, you know, was highly offended, refused to step down. In fact, Andy McCarthy tells us that there were only 40, I think 46 was the number that Attorney General Sessions, 46 he asked to step down. But most of the others, according to Andy McCarthy, had already resigned because they know how it works. When a new president comes in, it's a new sheriff, so they found other positions, so he didn't have to let go all the others. But Preet Bharara is claiming that it's because he's investigating Donald Trump and he's being picked on, and it's just not the case. In fact, Andy writes, in March of 1993, Janet Reno began her tenure as President Bill Clinton's Attorney General by summarily firing United States attorneys from 93 of 94 federal districts. And so it just gives you the history. But as you hear, you know, the left, you know, the gnashing and wailing, and Elizabeth Warren twisting the facts on this. I just wanted you to know what's actually happening. So I don't know what's gonna happen, who's going to be replace them, but God willing, there'll be some good men out there doing some really good things, and that's what we pray for. And by the way, Newt Gingrich weighed in a little bit on this. He's talking, though, about the broader issue, not just of U.S. attorneys, but of all the people. We have already discussed the fact that Donald Trump has inherited all of these agencies, and we've talked about state, we talk about the Justice Department and others more frequently, but there are tons of agencies, and they are filled with Obama appointees who are undermining him. We know this, don't we? It's not hard to find. It's not hard to miss. Some of them have already defied the president, some of the Justice Department. So we know that they must be removed. We have to get them out. And we've got to do it down as far down the chain as we possibly can. So Newt Gingrich gave some historical perspective on this on Fox, and I wanted you to hear what he had to say.
I would say to every cabinet officer and every agency head, identify the people who are totally opposed to us and figure out how you're either going to fire them or you're going to reassign them. I mean, we may have the largest federal offices in rural Idaho and Montana you've ever seen. But I would methodically go through the entire government. Abraham Lincoln, when he came in, fired 70% of the senior bureaucrats in the federal government because he had to get rid of Southern sympathizers and he had to have people in place who were willing to fight a civil war. 70% in the first couple months. Trump's going to have a similar process. He's not going to have any choice. Remember, 95% of the money given by federal officials was given to Hillary Clinton, 97% at the Justice Department, 99% at the State Department. Now, that tells you there are a lot of folks out there who ain't for Donald Trump, and they're not going to help him.
All right, that was Newt Gingrich, a great historical perspective. And so that's the maze that the president has to work through. And underneath him, then, he has people in the office that my understanding is that all the hires now are going through Reince Priebus. Now, Reince Priebus was the chairman of the Republican National Committee from Wisconsin. But Reince is, how shall I say it? Let's just say Reince is pragmatic, and he really is connected in establishment circles. So a lot of the hires that have come through, this is very complicated, but I'm just telling you things that you may or may not find interesting. This may put you to sleep, but this is why Donald Trump has such difficulty. And when you hear criticisms of why the right things are not being done yet, this is what he is dealing with. So you've got all the hires going through the office of Reince Priebus. So you've got really good people, really good conservatives who've submitted their resumes, have been recommended, and they're not even getting an interview, nothing. And then you have establishment types that are coming through. And I told you just last week that it was Senator Rob Portman's office was bragging about how they had managed to get their people inside the White House. So the president is not just contending with Obama appointees and sympathizers with Obama's, transformation of America, but he has to contend with establishment who are not his friends either. How could he possibly know? He cannot possibly micromanage every head of every agency. He can't know the character of every man or every woman. He can't know their history. It's not possible. And that's why he has to have around him people that he trusts. But there's a short list of people that he can trust. Literally, a very short list. So this is what we get. I want to read this to you. In fact, I'm going to read almost the whole thing to you because I'm really concerned about this. You heard the president make much of Mad Dog Mattis when he appointed him to, right offhand, I can't even remember what Mad Dog Mattis's position is. In fact, look that up, guys, so I can be... Secretary of Defense. I couldn't remember. Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis. Okay, and I've heard lots of concerns about him. Now, he supposedly has a good war record, and he's aggressive. What did he say? Something about killing. He felt very free about killing. He's a general. He's been in battle. So Donald Trump liked that about him, and I'm not sure who recommended Mattis, but it wasn't the people who understand the dangers of the Muslim Brotherhood. Trust me, it wasn't those people. It wasn't the people that you hear on this show, the people that I know well. I guarantee you they did not recommend Mad Dog Mattis, and I'll tell you why. Secretary Mattis has picked an Undersecretary of Defense for Policy. Her name is Ann Patterson. She's not been confirmed yet, but I want you to see how this goes. Hear the president on the basis of what recommendation, I don't know, but it's not from those who understand that issue, which I think the president does understand, but he's got people around him advising who don't, or some do, and they are determined to shut out those that are concerned about the infiltration of the Muslim Brotherhood. It's getting to critical mass. But here's my point. Ann Patterson, Politico says this: if nominated and confirmed, Patterson would hold the fourth most powerful position at the Pentagon, and it would effectively be the top civilian in the Defense Department, since both Mattis and his deputy, Robert Work, were military officers. As ambassador to Egypt between 2011 and 2013, Patterson worked closely with former Egyptian President Mohamed Morsi and his Islamist government. Can we say Muslim Brotherhood? She came under fire. That's my words. She came under fire for cultivating too close a relationship with the regime and for discouraging protests against it. This is putting it mildly. Back during the months leading to the June 30th, 2013 revolution, Patterson, the Brotherhood stooge, as she was called by all, from news analysts to the Egyptian street, was arguably one of the most hated individuals by millions of Egyptians who took to the streets. And then this is from PJ Media. We'll put this on our Facebook page so you can see it. You see a picture of her, big poster of her with Obama, and it says, Obama and Patterson support terrorism in Egypt. And then this I can't read, but it says, kick this blank out of Egypt. These are Egyptians in the streets protesting the rule of the Muslim Brotherhood. And then it's got a picture of her, one of them, with Mohamed Morsi, with a caption, we know what you did last summer. This is Ann Patterson. She is the pick of Mad Dog Madison to be the Assistant Secretary of State for Near Eastern Affairs, but I think it gets worse. In the days leading to the revolution, Patterson called on Egyptians not to protest. She even met with the Coptic Pope, there's the Christians in Egypt, and asked him specifically to urge the nation's Christian minority not to oppose the Brotherhood, even though Christians were naturally going to suffer the most under Morsi, especially in the context of accusations of blasphemy. And soon after the revolution, she repeatedly tried to reinstate the Brotherhood to power. Patterson demanded that Egypt's recently appointed Supreme Commander of the Egyptian Armed Forces, General Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, release all Muslim Brotherhood members currently being held for questioning. And when Sisi rejected this order, the American ambassador, Ann Patterson, began threatening him that Egypt will turn into another Syria and live through a civil war. Another report said Patterson was trying to communicate with General Sisi, demanding dialogue with the leaders of the Muslim Brotherhood and concessions to them, to which Sisi reportedly retorted, stop meddling in our affairs. The Egyptian people are capable of looking after their own welfare. This is Ann Patterson. She's the nominee by General Mattis to be Assistant Secretary of State for Near Eastern Affairs. There's more to this. In a live interview on Tahrir TV, a political insider and former Egyptian member of the parliament, Mustafa Bakari, exposed the relationship between Patterson and Karat al-Shatir, the deputy leader of the Muslim Brotherhood. He said she was regularly seen going to and from the Brotherhood's leader's private residence as opposed to meeting at the party's headquarters. He said that she told al-Shatir, we, the U.S., will stand by you regarding the June 30th protests, and that she treated the Brotherhood leader as the true ruler of the nation. Bakari ended the interview saying, in my opinion, she is a member of the sleeper cells of the Brotherhood, likely recruited by Essam el-Aryan or Muhammad al-Baghdadi. So there's more, but I'm not going to read the rest of it. We'll put this on our Facebook page. And this is why the president is walking in treacherous waters. We need to pray for him. And when we come back, I want to talk to you about what's happened with the health care bill, because that's pretty important and it's complex. There's some good news and some bad news, so stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
American Family Radio, equipping you to change the culture.
AFR has been a tremendous positive influence for us. I've been searching to find something that would give me actual facts and statistics, information about the things that are going on in our world from a Christian perspective, and AFR just fit that niche perfectly. Abraham Hamilton, absolutely love. And I've been telling everyone I know that you need to turn off your TV and listen to AFR and get facts to know how to apply to our daily lives. I just wanted to let y'all know that. I know that Satan is bombarding everyone with negativism. It's not going to do any good, but you are making a positive impact. So thank you for every effort. Thank you for your programming. I listen to it all day long.
Your partnership makes a difference. Join us for our three-day share-a-thon starting April 4th. American Family Radio, boldly standing for truth for your family.
From Samaritan's Purse and Franklin Graham comes Facing Darkness. In 2014, as the Ebola virus was devastating West Africa,
the numbers of new cases and deaths are still rising.
International relief organization Samaritan's Purse stepped up.
God has called us to care for the dying, to care for those that are suffering.
We can't say we're Samaritan's Purse and not help.
My phone rang. One of our doctors, Kent Brantley, has Ebola.
And then David looked at me and he said, "You too have Ebola."
We're there to save life. We're there in your name. Why?
Despite the fact that things were out of control, we knew that God was in control.
God puts you in places and supplies the strength to deal with.
Jesus Christ didn't run. We run to the fire. We don't run away from it.
Facing Darkness, a true story of faith. In select cinemas for one night only, Thursday, March 30th. For theaters and tickets, go to facingdarknessmovie.com. That's facingdarknessmovie.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Peter Koh, and I'm a business major, and this is my junior year at the college. What I love about the athletics here at Truett McConnell University is the coaches and their side of trying to teach sports from a biblical mindset with sportsmanship involved, and it really changes the way that you pursue the game, not just passionately doing it for other people, but also for yourself and to glorify God in that, which is completely different from most other schools.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Pavel Fesyuk of Rochester, New York, is an exterminator by day and a cage fighter by night. The other day, he was at a red light when he noticed a motorist in distress. The driver had something lodged in his throat. Others drove around the stricken man, but Pavel pulled over to help, and the entire episode was captured on a dash cam video. Now, the victim was much larger than Pavel, so the Heimlich maneuver was out of the question. So Pavel improvised, using a move he normally uses to take down fighters. And sure enough, it worked. You can watch the video on ToddStarnes.com. His colleagues are calling him a hero, but Pavel said he just offered to help someone in need, much like a good Samaritan once did in a time long past, lending comfort and aid to a stranger when others turned away. A modern-day parable. In Rochester, New York, I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. Just a little interesting, the report that came from CNS News. Just yesterday, the federal government collected a record of approximately $611,318,000,000 in individual income tax revenues through the first 5 months of fiscal 2017. Now, that sounds pretty good, right? But the problem is, it still left a $348,984,000,000 deficit. See, that the problem is we are in such debt. We were placed in such debt by Barack Obama. Trillions. I mean, I don't even know what it is now. It was 20. It was around 20 the last I was counting. And the interest on that kind of debt, you understand that. You know how your credit card bill, if you don't pay it off, just it accumulates. It gets bigger and bigger. It's terrible. Interest is a killer. And so we must get out of this debt, which makes this interesting because this just came in my box as I was talking to you. It was from Politico. It says President Donald Trump will sign an executive order today to reorganize the federal government. The order will require a thorough examination of every executive department and agency to see where money is being wasted, how services can be improved, and whether programs are truly serving American citizens. And so that's just very interesting. I have to just say, I think President Trump is trying his best to do his best. I just think he's trying to give it his all, and I'm trying to explain to you the obstacles, and when he isn't trying and when he gets it wrong, I promise you, I'll say that, but I think he is really trying. But he's got people fighting him at every turn and undermining him at every turn and, you know, not wishing him well. And one of those was all over television yesterday, and he's just continues. This is my favorite senator, you know. Think about that. Who's my favorite senator? Not favorite senator. He was on the State of the Union, and this is what Senator John McCain had to say.
President Trump has to provide the American people, not just the Intelligence Committee, but the American people with evidence that his predecessor, former President of the United States, was guilty of breaking the law, because our Director of National Intelligence, General Clapper, testified that there was absolutely no truth to that allegation. So I think the president has one of two choices, either retract or to provide the information that the American people deserve, because if his predecessor violated the law, President Obama violated the law, we've got a serious issue here, to say the least.
I agree with that. We have a serious issue, and I think that's why people don't want to believe. They do, people in power don't want to believe that Barack Obama had anything to do with any kinds of surveillance of the Trump campaign. And I just think that if you know the circumstances, and we've talked a great deal about it, you would be hard-pressed to think that the president wasn't very involved in this. I played for you just last week an interview with a former CIA State Department operative who said that Jim Clapper and head of CIA, John Brennan, were very much involved. And we know that there's a pattern of this. We also know that the New York Times itself, on January the 20th, reported there was wiretapping of the Trump campaign. They said it was in their headline. So you know, I just have to say it again, because obviously the left continues to repeat the fact, oh, the Trump is just crazy. He's crazy. That could never have happened. Crazy Trump. He tweets these things that are just ridiculous. I don't believe they're ridiculous. And again, I think the denial by Brennan and Clapper were on the word wiretap, even though the New York Times used that word in their headline, because it's much greater than wiretap. It's surveillance. It's broader than wiretap. It's much more invasive. And so it goes. And by the way, Hillary, the ambassador, the Russian ambassador, in an interview said, of course, there's hysteria surrounding Trump's links to Russia. He said, we met with Hillary Clinton's election campaign team. And so on and on it goes. It just really is amazing how twisted the words become, and how the journalists are wanting so badly, by the choice of their words, by omitting, by hinting, by the way they say things, to infer all kinds of stuff that just isn't there. So that's kind of an update on that. But John McCain, of course, beating the drum on trying to really destroy Donald Trump. So I'm just telling you, Mr. Trump has enemies all around. And that brings me to what I want to talk about now. Today, the CBO, Congressional Budget Office, is going to release their estimate on the cost of this new, I'll call it Ryan Care, because it is Paul Ryan's plan. And remember last week, I told you, I think we had a clip of it, I don't know if we have it handy, but Paul Ryan, in an interview that we played, talked about he couldn't wait for the CBO estimates to come out, because they were either going to be good or they were going to be great. Anybody remember that? If we have that handy, Adam, it'd be good to play it, because he said I can't wait for those estimates to come out, because they're going to be either good or they're going to be great. And I'm thinking, really? That's ridiculous, because we know that the CBO, for one thing, is no friend of Republicans, and they have been notoriously wrong in the past. They underestimated Obamacare, and I don't think they're going to be the friend of the Republican leadership on this. But they should be a nonpartisan, that's the goal, a nonpartisan agency that really does give congressmen an idea of what things are going to cost before they vote on them. So they're supposed to release their report today. It doesn't look like it's going to be good for the Republican leadership. But so Gary Cohen, who works with the president, was trying to defend the numbers that they're anticipating yesterday. Let's listen.
Will the president support a plan? If the CBO says that millions of people will lose their health insurance coverage, will the president continue to support that plan?
But Chris, it's not just about coverage. It's about access to care. It's about access to be able to see your doctors. The numbers of who's covered and who's not covered, that's interesting, and I know that may make some headlines, but what we care about is people's ability to get health care and people's ability to go see their doctor. That's what we care about, and that's what we're driving for.
All right, so I don't think it's going to be good. I really don't, and I don't think it's going to be good because I think the costs are going to be astronomical, and I'm not sure exactly how Ryan and team are going to spend this, and of course they pulled the White House into it. Acting as though this is Trump's plan, when really it isn't Donald Trump's plan. Donald Trump has spoken in principles and generalities, not in details. He wants to, do away with Obamacare, wants to repeal it and replace it. It is true that Donald Trump goes too far for Republican free market people, including myself, when it comes to insisting on a replacement. I just think let the free market work this out. Let the free market come up with plans and ways. The government should not be providing, should not be big brother on health care. I'm against that. So it's certainly true that Donald Trump is, he's not traditionally a Republican, and he's not, as they would say, an ideologue. He has great instincts, I think, but I don't think he understands all of the principles of the free market, at least not yet. He's got people around him who are bringing him along. But so the CBO's report is coming out today, and we'll see what it's going to be, but I don't think it's going to be good news, and we'll see how they respond to that. But last Thursday on the air, we talked to Daniel Horowitz about the new bill that's being proposed, and we posted several of Daniel's articles on our Facebook page. If you haven't seen those are great tools for you to understand what's in this new bill and why many of us have so many objections. And so I mentioned to you that there was a great, and we talked to Daniel about it, I feared that the leadership of the Republican Party would come after conservatives, the good guys, the Dave Bratz, the Raul Labradors, the Jim Jordan from Iowa, the Mark Meadows from Ohio, Mark Meadows from North Carolina, that they would come after those really good men in the Freedom Caucus because they are the loudest objectors to this new health care plan. And because this is what the establishment always does. They did it on immigration, too. They pretended when they ran for office, this congressman, including Ryan, that they were all about tightening the borders and, enforcing immigration law. But they weren't. They got elected, and then they did the opposite. And this is what John Boehner, under, I guess, his tutelage, this is what they learned to do. And then they would go out and campaign as conservatives. They would be reelected using the talking points of the Freedom Caucus, the talking points of this show on these issues. They would, oh, yes, we're going to repeal. We're going to stop this. This is what Mitch McConnell says all the time. But then when they got in place, they did the opposite. So, the proverbial speaking out of the both sides of their mouth. So this time, Paul Ryan has come out with this plan, which, by the way, they are refusing to say who helped them write this plan. We don't know who on K Street, that's the name, the nickname in Washington for lobbying, for the big money lobbyists. They are on K Street. And the Chamber of Commerce, who's all over this bill, they love it. They're all in favor. Well, why? Who helped write this? Well, Republicans won't say. In fact, Sarah Palin made a comment. I thought this is actually very cool. She said they should be like NASCAR drivers. They should come out in their suits, but they should have, the logos of all the companies and organizations that have gone behind writing this bill so that we can exactly see who it is they really do represent. And I think she's right. All right, so on immigration, you will recall this Gang of Eight bill. Paul Ryan was all about it. So was John McCain. They really lied to the American people, and then they tried to target and destroy conservative members of Congress who really tried to do what was right by the people, who really represented the people's interests on this. And they tried. They actually spent tons of money in their districts trying to get them out of office, and they succeeded in many cases to get some defeated. And that's why we have really, on this, from my perspective, a really, really bad Congress right now, and a really bad Senate, because they managed the lefties on the in the Republican side managed to co-opt the language of the right in order to get reelected, and then they moved to their regular position, which is not your position. It doesn't represent the American people. They lied to us, and then they got the conservatives out. So I was concerned they would do that in this case, make it seem as though President Trump was all about this particular bill that they have written, not with him, but with their K Street and Chamber of Commerce friends. And they have presented it that way to Donald Trump, I think. In fact, remember I told you Rand Paul was saying that he felt that Paul Ryan was pulling the wool over Donald Trump's eyes. So Donald Trump can't possibly get in the weeds of all of these pieces of policy. A good leader doesn't do that. So he have to trust someone. So they're telling him it's doing all the things that he said on the campaign trail that he wanted to do. But that's a lie, too. So now they're telling him this bill is great. It's got to be passed. But they've got these members that are just resisting, and they're trying to undermine you, Mr. President. And, you know, on your first promise to the people, these people are these Dave Bratz and Mark Meadows and Raul Labrador and these guys and Jim Jordans and other members of the Freedom Caucus. They're obstructing. They're trying to stop you from making your campaign promise, and we need to stop this. And so as a result, Paul Ryan is spending money out of the Treasury of the House of Representatives to target 40 members of the Freedom Caucus in their campaigns coming up. I'll let you hear one of the ads against Raul Labrador. Here it is.
The Republicans' American Health Care Act versus Obamacare. Obamacare is full of job-destroying mandates. The new plan eliminates them. Obamacare puts bureaucrats in control. The Republicans' plan puts patients and doctors in charge. Obamacare stuck families with soaring premiums. The new plan provides more choices and lower costs.
Repeal and replace Obamacare.
Tell Congressman Labrador to vote with President Trump.
Yeah, so here you go. This is the way they're positioning it. They're saying that if you do not embrace this bill that Paul Ryan is so crazy about, can't wait, this is what we've been dreaming about, he said. If you don't vote for that bill, then you are opposing President Trump. While these very men that are being attacked by Paul Ryan and crew are the ones who really did step out and support President Trump. It wasn't Paul Ryan. It wasn't the leadership in the House. They were the ones who were undermining Donald Trump, just like Mitch McConnell. They're not his friends. And trust me, if things start to go south for the president, they'll be the first ones stabbing him in the back. I think they have pretty plainly sometimes in public already. And now they're convincing him that they are the champions of this bill and that the people that really are the trustworthy members of Congress are the enemy. So they're targeting them with all of this money. And I just, I have a lot to say about this. The other part of this is Dave Drucker in the Washington Examiner, since we last spoke, wrote an article saying that President Trump has told Republican leaders that he's prepared to play hardball with congressional conservatives to pass the GOP health care bill. Sources told the Washington Examiner that Trump made that threat in a White House meeting on Tuesday with House Majority Whip Steve Scalise and other members of the House GOP whip team that helps line up votes. Trump's threat is the one that could resonate. Most of the Republicans who oppose the GOP's American Health Care Act represent ruby red districts that strongly support Trump and his agenda. Therefore, they could be the most susceptible to a midterm primary challenge, especially if Trump tells those voters that their member of Congress is blocking him from fulfilling his promise to repeal President Obama's health care law. And so that's what Dave Drucker has reported. And we know now that the House leadership is targeting the Freedom Caucus, but not so fast. Because the Freedom Caucus met with the president last week, and I'm going to tell you kind of what we've heard from that when I come back. Sandy Rios in the morning on, where, what am I on? AFR Talk.
Thank you. These days, health insurance is incredibly expensive, especially if you don't have coverage through your employer. If you're concerned about the costs or the ethical dilemmas of insurance, here's great news. There's an affordable, God-honoring alternative. It's called MediShare. Unlike insurance, MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing community whose members share each other's medical expenses. It's about half the cost of insurance, and it's fully acceptable under the law. Best of all, you never pay for things that go against your beliefs. If you're a Christian looking for a truly affordable healthcare solution, MediShare is just what the doctor ordered.
Learn how thousands of Christians can help you save on your healthcare. For your free information guide, call 855-PSALM-23. Not available in Montana. MediShare, affordable biblical healthcare. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Join Norman Geisler, Richard Land, Michael Brown, Frank Turek, and others for Southern Evangelical Seminary's National Conference on Christian Apologetics. It's October 13th and 14th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Enjoy informative talks, a live debate, and a dialogue with Ken Ham from Answers in Genesis. Plus, there's the premiere of the American Family Association documentary, The God Who Speaks. Register by May 1st and receive a special gift. Visit ses.edu for details.
Hello, friend. I'm Pastor Ron Jones, and I'm glad to tell you something good has come to American Family Radio. Something Good is a daily half-hour Bible teaching program that I'm hosting at 6:30 p.m. Central Time. In a world full of so much bad news, we're glad to bring you something good. Learn more at somethinggoodradio.org. That's somethinggoodradio.org.
Whoa, we have not had a response like this before. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We've been doing these spiritual heritage tours for like 20 years. We're sold out for June already, if you can believe that. We've got space left on our September tours of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, and then Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. We call them spiritual heritage tours, and I don't know how long these September seats will last. To what do you attribute that to, someone might ask? Maybe it's the fact that we have a new person occupying the White House. Maybe that has something to do with it. But in any event, we welcome you to come with us on our September Spiritual Heritage Tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon and Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. Those are two separate trips. You can do both, or you can do one or the other. We'd love to have you. Go to spiritualheritagetours.com. spiritualheritagetours.com.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Sharia supremacism is again commanding attention on the European continent. Thankfully, it's not because Turkey's government is further mutating Western civilization by migrating their millions of additional Muslims. Instead, Turkish President Recep Erdogan is trying to enlist millions of his countrymen already resident in Europe to vote in an upcoming referendum effectively to ratify totalitarian Sharia's triumph over democracy. For this purpose, he's been dispatching advocates to countries like the Netherlands. The Dutch government has infuriated Erdogan by blocking their entry, thereby uncharacteristically defying an Islamist's demands. It's clearly afraid the Turkish emissaries would intensify domestic hostility towards unchecked immigration and drive voters this week to support the anti-open borders party of parliamentarian Geert Wilders. Erdogan says he'll retaliate, which simply underscores that Islamist Turkey is a threat, not a reliable NATO ally. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
The only question about the CBO, is it going to be really good or is it going to be great when that number finally comes out? I think it's going to be on Monday.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing. It's not funny. I have to laugh about something. That actually wasn't Paul Ryan. It was Mick Mulvaney, who is the congressman who's leading kind of the money part of this bill. He's been out in front trying to fight it, too. Mick used to be part of the Freedom Caucus, but I don't know what happened to him because he doesn't represent the Freedom Caucus right now and his opinion on this. So the CBO report is coming out today, we think, and it's either going to be good or it's going to be great. So according to leadership in the House, you know, anytime the government tries to pay for and provide medical care for every citizen, for everything, it's not going to be good or great. It's not possible. The government can't feed all of us. How about if they all feed us? How about if they give us vouchers so we can go to restaurants or all go to the grocery store and buy what we want and just, you know, keep feeding all of us? How about if they, you know, they can't do that. We are in a free society where we take responsibility for our own lives. And when you, that's one of the reasons you work hard, so that you can provide more things for your family, better food, better medical care, whatever. It's an incentive to work, to do better, to take care of oneself. Once the government starts doing everything, people get lazy. It is human nature. It is human nature. I'll never forget when I was in Russia in 1990, when Boris Yeltsin was still running for president, the Soviet Union was still intact, and there was so much alcoholism and laziness, and farmers were not, you know, picking crops, and potatoes were rotting in the field, and people weren't working because they got whatever they needed for free from the government. So there was no incentive to work. They just didn't care. They weren't that interested. And this is what happens. It has nothing to do with race. I know a lot of people look at the black community and identify in a negative way, that sort of as though that's part of their intrinsic nature, those on welfare, but it isn't. It's everyone who is given something for nothing becomes a lazy bum. Everyone, regardless of race, color. It just happens. It's that if your parents spoil you, spoiled rich kids are lazy bums often, so regardless of their color. So we don't want that. We need a free market plan so that Americans can continue their fierce independence, taking care of themselves, working harder to try to better themselves, and then bettering their own circumstances. There's nothing in the Constitution that says the government is going to supply for you everything you could possibly need. It just doesn't, that's not our way of life. It might happen in Europe under socialism, but I might add, look what's happening to Europe. That's not where we want to go. So, anyway, I want to go back to this healthcare thing because there's a lot to say. In regard to Obamacare, just some figures. The estimation is that Obamacare and its regulations are responsible for an estimated $19 billion in lost wages. That it's responsible for 10,000 plus fewer business establishments, nearly 300,000 lost jobs, $51 billion in costs, and more than 172 million hours of paperwork compliance. That's what we have Obamacare to thank for, and that's why we're one of the many reasons we're trying to get out of it, not the least of which is, of course, it's people dying and not getting medical care. Yeah, they're covered, but they can't find a doctor. They can't afford the deductibles, but they're covered. It's not getting medical care is not the same thing as having a piece of paper that says you have some sort of insurance, and that's what we have to get past. All right, so I want to go back to those ads just quickly. I just want to repeat a couple of things. Paul Ryan was in trouble when the last election came up, in this last to retain his leadership. He promised members of the House Freedom Caucus in the fall of 2015, around the time he announced his campaign, he would not engage in this tactic, which was used by Boehner, to undermine his own members, that he would not do that. He promised them in person that he would not do that. And now they see that he's gone back on his word. He is targeting conservatives, and he's using money that should be used to defeat Democrats in very difficult districts. He's pouring it now out on his own, or conservatives in his caucus who don't agree with his particular plan on to replace health care. That's really pretty insidious, I think. And so this is a stunning article. I'm going to do my best to share this with you. Of all things, of all places, this is in the Huffington Post. This may be one of the only times I publish an article of the Huffington Post on our Facebook page, but I want Adam to put it there. It's written by Matt Fuller. It's called "Conservatives Find a Paul Ryan Workaround on Healthcare, Donald Trump." And I told you that the leadership is targeting conservatives. And then that Paul, that Drucker wrote in the Washington Times, Dave Drucker, that Donald Trump had said he was going to come after these conservatives, but then conservatives met with him this past week. And this is how it goes. Leaders of the Conservative House Freedom Caucus, unhappy with the Republican health care legislation being rushed through the House by Speaker Paul Ryan, are taking their concerns directly to President Donald Trump. Freedom Caucus Chairman Mark Meadows and former Chairman Jim Jordan, Republican Ohio, spent Thursday afternoon at the White House meeting with budget staffers, Office of Management, and Budget Director Mick Mulvaney and Trump himself. The group met for hours, according to Meadows, and Trump attended for a very lengthy time. It was an extremely productive day with the president, Meadows told a small group of reporters later. Okay, so I've already told you, Freedom Caucus is very concerned about this. Mark Meadows says the president actually shared with me that he wants to make sure he lowers premiums for Americans, and he wants to make sure that we get this done quickly. By the way, could I say Ryan's plan does not lower premiums? Conservatives have criticized, okay, I'm repeating myself, it doesn't lower premiums. No one's saying that the premiums will go down. Freedom Caucus member Raul Labrador of Idaho told the Huffington Post, no one's saying that about the cost of health care, and I don't think leadership is being honest with the president about this. Labrador said the Freedom Caucus has tried negotiating with House leadership, but they won't listen, and they just get mad and threaten them. So now he suggests conservatives were trying a different strategy. We're appealing to the president, who likes to negotiate, who likes to win, and likes to keep his promises. President Trump needs to understand that we, as the Freedom Caucus, are trying to protect him from the same old lines that leadership gives everybody over the last few years. And he needs to remember that it wasn't Paul Ryan who was standing by him when the chips were down. It was people like myself and others who were standing by him. So Labrador added that he didn't want to turn negotiations into an us versus them, and that conservatives were just trying to help Trump keep his promises. But this bill is not it. So Ryan has said, and this is Huffington Post again, that he's open to minor changes but not the core of the legislation. Conservatives say that position won't fly and want more than just tweaks. Meadows and other Freedom Caucus members didn't want to talk about specific amendments with reporters, but they're likely to push to restructure some portion of the bill's advanced refundable tax credits, which they don't like in principle. One of the things that I'll just throw in, you know, there was a tax penalty if you didn't, a mandate. You had to buy health insurance under Obamacare, or you'd pay a tax penalty. Well, the Republican leadership is bragging that the mandate is gone, but what it is if, I've told you, if you let your insurance coverage lapse for 2 months in one calendar year, the insurance company can increase your rate by 30% the next year. So it isn't a tax mandate, like you have to pay a tax penalty. Now you have to pay the insurance company 30% more if you miss 2 months. What if you're in financial trouble? What if you just can't afford it a couple of months because it's expensive? Oh, no, then you're going to slap on 30% more if you want coverage, and you'll have to pay it. So that did they get rid of the mandate, really? So it's just a mandate by another form. It goes to insurance companies, and that makes you wonder, going back to who likes this bill. It's the Chamber of Commerce. It's K Street, the lobbyists. Who wrote this bill? The leadership won't tell us. So the lack of consensus, back to this Huffington Post article, the lack of consensus has led Ryan to believe he can push the health care bill through the House if he just gets Trump's help. And he has presented the legislation as a binary choice. In other words, you have to take this bill, you conservatives. It repeals, he says, but it doesn't even do that. It repeals Obamacare and replaces it. This is what the president promised. This is what we're delivering. And if you don't vote for it, then you're not helping the president. That's how they're presenting it. And so Justin Amash, a Republican of Michigan, who's already spoken out against Ryan's presentation of the GOP legislation as take it or leave it, said it's not a yes or no. He said, that's false. You want me to use my Paris line? You can just rehash that one and put it in your article again, referring to his comment that Ryan's ultimatum was like saying, if we don't eat dinner in Paris tonight, our families will starve. Amash noted Thursday night that the conservatives may have better luck negotiating with Trump, and other Freedom Caucus members back that up. The leadership team has been saying, take it or leave it, so there's no headway to be made there. So Ryan's plan, according to Huffington Post, and I'm reading this because I believe they're absolutely spot on. Ryan's plan was to force this bill down conservatives' throats, daring them to vote against it, an Obamacare repeal that every Republican has campaigned on for years. Even though Freedom Caucus leaders swear they have the votes to take the legislation down, there were early signs that leadership could pick off some conservatives and convince them to support the bill. So now it concludes by saying Trump isn't moving in that direction. He's working with the Freedom Caucus to push the legislation further to the right. And Ryan is left to wonder what his bill will look like when they're done. So I'm not here to declare anything. I'm just telling you I'm more optimistic this morning than I was last Thursday because I think the signs are that the right people finally are talking to the president, men that he can trust, men that will speak the truth to him, that will push back and make their case, and not those that are trying to use the president to get rid of those icky conservatives. That's really what this boils down to. It's another chance for them to purge the House of the people that are provoking them, like the Dave Bratz, like the Raul Labradors, like the Jim Jordans, like the Mark Meadows, and on the list goes, Louis Gohmert. Those guys are annoying because they're so conservative. They just won't let us do what we want to do on immigration and on other things. This is a chance to get rid of them because we can get Mr. Trump now to come after them, and we could probably get them out of office, and that will solve our problem forever. I know. Listen, this is what they're doing, but this is not happening because the Freedom Caucus has gone to the White House. Now, I don't, and Donald Trump is listening to them. So I don't know what Donald Trump's going to do. I really don't know. I don't know where, who could know? I just don't know. I think there's no way to predict what is he going to do? He's got Reince Priebus in the office there handling the hiring. Reince is very much establishment. He's got Mike Pence. And as good as Vice President Pence is on some things, he has his feet pretty firmly planted in the establishment camp. And I think that I don't understand that, but it explains his double speak on Common Core. It explains his lack of commitment to the Religious Freedom Act, to a good one in Indiana. There are compromises that have been made that have troubled me for a long time. So I'm giving you lots of. Look, I know sometimes I was with some friends in Chicago over the weekend, and sometimes I know it's better. It would feel better not to know all these complications. You could relax and go on about your work. But I'm only telling you so you'll know how to pray. I think it's important. I'm encouraged this morning because I know that these guys in the Freedom Caucus, I don't know about all of them, but I know that most of them are committed Christians. These are men who pray. These are men who are, they have courage, and they want to do what's right. And so there they are. There are 40 of them. They're fighting the good fight. And I began to think that they were going to be targeted and defeated. And the unfairness of it just overwhelms me sometimes when I think about the chicanery and the dishonesty. I have another piece here by Daniel Horowitz. In fact, I'll just pull it out here. Daniel has written an article, Lie, Lie, Lie. Ryan and Company Caught in Twisted Pretzel of Lies to Preserve Obamacare. And I think probably we should put that on our Facebook page as well. And Daniel starts it with a verse. He says, false lips are an abomination of the Lord, but those who work faithfully are his delight. Proverbs 12:22. The lying being employed to preserve Obamacare has likely surpassed the degree of intensity the Gang of Eight immigration bill when Republicans were trying to convince conservatives the bill was the opposite of what it actually did. And he goes on to say, out of one side of their mouths, varying established figures say Rhino Care is full repeal. When we demonstrate that it's not, they blame the Senate parliamentarian and congressional process. They say we cannot repeal the price-hiking, competition-destroying regulations that form the core of Obamacare because the parliamentarian won't allow those provisions through the budget reconciliation process. So they're saying they're repealing it, but they're not repealing it. And then when they say they're not repealing it, they give you reasons that are actually false. And Daniel goes out to lay out why those are false. And that's why he titles his article, Lie, 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 Ryan and Company Caught in Twisted Pretzel of Lies to Preserve Obamacare. I don't know what's going to happen, but that's the way it's playing out. And there are people fighting it on your behalf, trying to do the right thing. We need to pray for them. This is Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.